need you here on my mind every hour of the day. Without your sweet inspiration,
Tuesday night, we're just a little bit late. You know, technical difficulties in the digital universe sometimes happen, but that's okay. We don't give up. We get on air and we have a good time anyway. Since it is 7:06, we're going to be off to the races. That's 7:06 p.m. Pacific on the West Coast. And, of course, this is the Tammy Jackson Show. This is Tammy Jackson, and I'm welcoming you to just slightly less than an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd like to do so, interact with comments and questions on Twitter during the show. Follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. Now, let's get going. My first guest tonight is a repeat guest. I love asking people back that have been fantastic guests. This is Jeff Cruer. Jeff Cruer is the host of Ringside Politics, a radio program in New Orleans dedicated to examining the top issues of the day on the local, state, and national levels. That show, which you all would like to listen to, I'm sure, it airs weekdays 7 to 11 a.m., I'm sure that's Central Time, on WGSO 990 AM. Jeff Cruer, welcome back to the Tammy Jackson Show.
Hey, Tammy, thanks for having me.
You know, I had you on a few months ago, and a lot has happened in the interim. Besides, you're such a prolific writer over at townhall.com. I thought, holy cow, I could pick and choose topics for a whole hour or two and still, you know, keep everybody entertained. But to start out with, did you see the Sessions hearing today?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I did see, I think, some key excerpts of it, and certainly followed along as much as I could from all the meetings I had going on this afternoon. But I think I got the gist of what was a very strong performance by Senator Sessions. What I saw, he looked angry. I mean, he looked certainly like he was defending his honor, and he did say it was a detestable lie that he colluded with the Russians, and I was glad to see some emotion. I really was.
Yes, I watched every minute of it, and I got to tell you, I felt the same way. I was glad because people assume, since he's a slow-talking Southerner, that he doesn't have a lot of fire in the belly, that who knows how brilliant he is or isn't, and so forth. I think people make assumptions that are flat-out wrong, and I was just so happy to see him assert himself and push back there. And in fact, I have the 31-second clip from his introductory statement where he said that it was a detestable lie. And we're going to play it, and then we'll talk about it. I'll read the short statement again so everybody can really take it in. But let's take 31 seconds here to listen to that clip.
I was your colleague in this body for 20 years, at least some of you. And I and the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie. Relatedly, there is the assertion that I did not answer Senator Franken's question honestly at my confirmation hearing.
Now that is some pushback. I love it. I'll read it one more time so everybody can get exactly what AG Sessions said. I was your colleague in this body for 20 years, at least some of you, and the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie. Man, those are strong words, and I appreciated them, didn't you, Jeff? For some reason, I am not hearing Jeff Cruer.
Tammy, do you hear me?
I hear
Hello?
You now.
Okay. What I was saying is that he really, really, I thought, had a great opening statement. And then there were a few points during his testimony when he did show more bursts of emotion, especially when he was dealing with Senator Wyden.
Oh.
And I thought that was a great exchange, too, where, you know, he was the senator was trying to pin him down as to, you know, why the FBI director was, you know, found it problematic about his recusal, and Sessions responded, you know, why don't you tell me there's nothing there. This is secret innuendo. And he I'm glad normally Republicans, I think, don't show enough emotion, don't show enough anger. The Democrats are the ones that really rule the day for these hearings. But I thought in this case, I thought the attorney general really did well. And I thought he scored well with the American people. That's my take. Now, of course, the liberal media is spinning it a different way. But I thought he did well.
Yes, yes. Funny you should mention Senator Ron Wyden, who happens to be a senator from Oregon, my native state. And I was tweeting at the time. I was so upset. I said, can I be more ashamed of Oregon Senator Ron Wyden? Not my senator. Shameful. And I tweeted that AG Sessions was putting Wyden in his place. Thank God. Somebody else that did really well in this hearing that I loved was Tom Cotton. And I'm sure you've heard him at times when he gets a little bit fired up. And he pretty much said, this is like a special ops thriller by anybody you can think of, only a more implausible scenario to think that Jeff Sessions was there at that gathering that they had at that reception prior to his speech, and some kind of collusion was going down, and I just loved it. I think I'm going to have to write something about it, but I thought you'd want to mention a little something because it was an exchange that I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I like Senator Cotton, and I thought, again, he maybe had the best performance of the Republicans on the panel, and you know, I thought Senator Lankford did well, the senator from Oklahoma.
Yes.
And but I think the real star, Tammy, was Jeff Sessions.
Yep.
And I really liked the way he handled everything. And here's the thing. My whole take on this is that this is an incredible waste of time, effort, energy. It's a distraction from the agenda that the Trump administration was hired to enact. The Democrats and the media are colluding to really prevent the president from getting the job done for the American people. I don't think there's anything here, no obstruction, no election hacking, no illegal activity by Donald Trump, who everyone says was not being investigated. Again, they keep going on and on with this and more hearings and more testimony, but I'm hoping that we can start spending more time, Tammy, on the agenda, which is really what I think the Republicans in Congress should start focusing on a lot more.
Yes. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. That was one of the things that I appreciated about Senator Tom Cotton. He asked, you know, what was going on that after 6 months of investigations and taxpayer money paying for that with absolutely no evidence of collusion, why the continued hearings? And AG Sessions said, thank you for saying that. So I think that they agreed with you. I mean, we need to move on, please, people. And in this vein, I think the reason they're harping on this is because they're a bunch of sore losers. And you wrote a great article in early May, Hillary Clinton, Sorest Loser in History. It was wonderful. And the article begins. It has been 6 months since the political world was rocked to its core with the upset election of Donald Trump as president. One person who has not gotten over Trump's victory is his opponent, Hillary Clinton. In an interview with Christiane Amanpour of CNN, Clinton blamed the loss on the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28 and Russian WikiLeaks. So, Jeff Cruer, Never mind that she was one of the worst candidates in history, one of the least likable candidates in history, that she called half the country a basket of deplorables. It was all their fault.
Well, I mean, I think even the Democrats, Tammy, are getting tired of Hillary and tired of her going on all these interviews, blaming everyone and everything else but her own campaign and her own lousy message and her. She's just not a pleasant person. She doesn't connect with people. She doesn't inspire people. She doesn't motivate people. And she had, of course, history on her side. She was trying to be the first woman ever elected president, and that motivated some. But her personality, her message was just not compelling. And I think they made some mistakes in the campaign. They didn't campaign in key states like Wisconsin. They took for granted a lot of voters, and they left an opening, and Donald Trump swept in and rocked the political world, and they haven't gotten over it since, and the supporters haven't gotten it over, and the media hasn't gotten over it, and that's why we're going through this whole nonsense. So I think we've got to see it for what it is. Yep. It's just a massive distraction by angry, unhinged people. These folks on the left are acting like lunatics, Tammy, lunatics. The language they're using, what they're doing with these plays, Shakespeare plays in the Central Park, and what they're doing on CNN, and the language they're using from the chair of the DNC to a New York senator. I mean, it's just, it's an abomination. I've never seen anything like it.
I have not seen anything like it either. And one thing that I think is quite interesting, when Hillary called half the country a basket of deplorables, I know that you remember that Mitt Romney, who said, made a comment in a closed door meeting with donors about 47% of the country were going to vote for the other party no matter what you did. And that sealed his fate. That one comment lumping them all together. And he was a relatively good man. He wasn't a real forceful candidate, but he wasn't a horrible person. He was a good person. And he just made that one comment, and the media ran with it, and that sealed his fate.
Right, and that was nothing compared to what Hillary said. I mean, what he said was, in a closed-door meeting, you know, what Hillary said was really before a crowd. I mean, she said that from the podium. I mean, she really made a tremendous error, and of course, many conservatives made mention of it throughout the campaign, but the media tried to give her a pass on it. And what I think is interesting, when you look at that race, she had double the money of Donald Trump, $1.2 billion versus about $600 million. She had, of course, the political expertise of four decades in politics, her husband being the former president. She had a unified Democratic Party, and of course, Donald Trump was dealing with problems within the Republican Party. And, of course, she had 95% of the media with her.
Right.
And even with all those advantages and history on her side, running to be the first woman president, all those advantages still weren't enough to really push her over the finish line, and she's just a terrible candidate. In 2008, she lost to an upstart, unknown Manchurian candidate, Barack Obama, who came out of nowhere with no vetting, no credentials, and he burst on the scene and beat her.
Yes.
And 8 years later, she lost to a novice, Donald Trump, who was just constantly criticized by the media. So the Democrats really got some soul searching to do. I don't know if they're going to do it, though. It seems like their plan is just continue to pound on Donald Trump.
Yes, and to veer to the left. As you said, the DNC chair, his language is abysmal. I seriously wonder if they even understand Americans at all. It's the craziest thing. You know, you end the article, which people can find at townhall.com, and it was titled Hillary Clinton's Sorest Loser in History. The article ends, "In the real world, the only person to blame for the Democrat Party's embarrassing loss is Hillary Clinton," to which we all say, amen to that. it's absolutely true. I just kind of wish her and Bubba would go away somewhere and do the whole grandparent thing like she said she was going to do. That would be a good deal. Just stay out of the public
and
line.
Take, and take more long hikes in the woods together. I mean,
yes,
they can go hiking all over the country, get a Winnebago, and then visit America. I'd love for them to do that.
I know, but by all means, I'm asking her not to show up in my neck of the woods wearing yoga spandex. That's something that would take an amazing amount of brain bleach, and I don't want to see it. But otherwise, they're welcome to tour this wonderful country. Hey, let's talk about, I've got a few of your articles that I just had so much fun reading. Another one, and this really interests me because I like this guy. Tim, the article, again, at townhall.com, Tim Allen is the last man standing. And for anybody listening, Tim Allen, you probably remember him from Home Improvement fame, and he's done some movies, and his stuff is usually pretty good fare, and it's fairly palatable for us normal Americans. It's not all politically correct. And Last Man Standing was canceled due to its content, but it was not because it was indecent content. The article begins, despite healthy ratings, ABC promptly canceled Tim Allen's popular sitcom, Last Man Standing. The show was a successful part of the ABC lineup for 6 years. While some media reports claim that ABC canceled the show due to poor ratings, the truth is the program was the second highest rated comedy and the third highest rated scripted show on the network. But Allen's real crime was not poor ratings, but to have the audacity to announce he was conservative. Oh, my goodness, Jeff Cruer, not conservative.
That really upset me when I found out about that show, because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the acting, which I thought was first rate. I think Tim Allen is just a great star. And I guess he made a mistake going on Jimmy Kimmel's show and talking about he was out of step with Hollywood. And I think he had admitted he went to the Trump inauguration. And I guess they figured he had the bubonic plague. I mean, I guess they figured that he was someone that they could no longer associate with then. And it's just the unbelievable bias of these networks. Most of their programming is filth and crappy reality shows and liberal, politically correct programming. This was one little bone that they threw to a 63 million American Trump audience of middle Americans and traditional family supporters and folks in the Midwest and the Rust Belt and the South. And they just, after 6 years, after strong ratings, as you said, they canceled it. And it really was very disappointing to a lot of people. And petitions were formed and a lot of people signed it, but they didn't rescind their decision, and unfortunately, a very good program is gone now.
Yeah, it's sad because, as you said, there are so few programs. I like Blue Bloods with Tom Selleck. Believe it or not, the guy's a Republican and semi-conservative. No wonder I like the show. It's not totally offensive to me and my worldview, but most shows on are. And I guess, Jeff, that the moral of the story is be careful if you're conservative or if any characters in your shows are conservatives in Hollywood, because they have zero tolerance for opposing views.
Zero. You're right. Zero.
Yep.
And I, down here in New Orleans, Tammy, they have, over the years, developed sort of a mini industry down here. We did some tax cuts. We brought in some movies, and it sort of was called Hollywood South for a while. And we rescinded some of the cuts and some of the movies left, but we still have a little bit of an industry down here with some movies being made. And I got to know some of these actors and actresses, and they told me, a few of them that are conservative, that they cannot mention that to any of their colleagues. They have to keep all of their political beliefs to themselves, because if they mention it, if people find out they're conservative, find out they support Donald Trump, they will never work again.
Wow.
So that's just sad. This is America. This is a country where we should have the First Amendment, freedom of speech. And you've got a whole industry where people that share our values as conservatives can't even speak out.
Yes, it's terrifically sad. Well, I want to end on a story that is also funny, and it's talking about political correctness, and it's something that I think you'll be interested in because you wrote the article, but I'm interested in for a different reason, and we'll talk about that. But about a week and a half ago, you had an article at townhall.com titled First Redskins, Now LSU Tigers Are Targets of Lunatics, and the article begins, most people probably think it's innocent for Louisiana State University, LSU, to feature Tigers as their mascot and display a well-maintained Mike the Tiger in an air-conditioned deluxe enclosure right outside the football stadium. This $3 million habitat is a mansion that tigers in the wild, or any animal for that matter, would love to call home. Unfortunately, all those assumptions are incorrect in an age of stifling political correctness. Today, it seems that the Fighting Tigers are racist symbols of oppression to African-American students at LSU. Okay, Jeff Cruer, what in the heck? Is every darn thing a trigger?
Yeah, it is. And for many years, we have enjoyed the Tigers as our mascot. And it has been a symbol of pride here in Louisiana. And lo and behold, in our age of political correctness, we have people now doing the research and finding that the Tigers were named after the Louisiana infantry that fought in the Civil War. And they were called the Fighting Tigers because they were battle-hardened and courageous warriors, and it was a nickname that they were given. And then when they started a football team back in 1895 and wanted to give them a nickname, the coach thought, well, let's name it after, you know, the Fighting Tigers from the Civil War, because they were hard-fought warriors, and they were tough on the battlefield. We want a team to be tough on the gridiron. So, and then, of course, they started adapting the use of a live tiger, and we had this beautiful enclosure that this $3 million enclosure this tiger lives in, and everybody loves the Tigers. But now you've got a petition that some wacko is trying to circulate to get the name changed. Right. And it sort of follows what happened in New Orleans in recent weeks, Tammy, where the mayor here, a very left-wing guy, was able to pass through the city council an ordinance to call some Confederate monuments nuisances.
Right.
So they took down four monuments, and this has sort of given all these leftists some momentum, and they're going after more and more and more. And you see it going on across the country, and they're taking down monuments in different areas, and it's really... it's a sad thing to see. I mean, it's I think now going to continue to be an issue, not just here in Louisiana, but in other states. And I personally view it as total political correctness and trying to erase history. Yep. And something that is very unproductive when we're trying to deal with current problems. People want to keep dealing with what happened in the Civil War. So it's the good news is that the petition didn't have much juice. When I last looked at it, it barely had 600 signatures, so it really hasn't caught fire. But the media did promote it, so it did get some attention.
Wow, it's ridiculous. And by the way, and here's the tag on here, your LSU Fighting Tigers could very well be facing my Oregon State University Beavers in the College World Series. So if the Beavs beat Cal State Fullerton and your Tigers beat Florida State Seminoles, then they'll be facing each other on Monday.
And wouldn't that be something? Because, I mean, my dad played for LSU, and he was a baseball player, so I've got a special place in my heart. I've got two children that go to LSU, so
wow.
I'm a big supporter of LSU. And I would love for that to happen. That's something that we can all be proud of here in Louisiana. So to have this kind of nonsense going on with the mascot, I just felt should be highlighted, and the absurdity of it highlighted.
Yes.
And just to show that it's really something that now is going on in more and more areas. And I think really, as conservatives, as just folks who care about this country, we have to fight back against this, because I think it's really destructive. And I look at what's happened in New Orleans, and, you know, these monuments were taken down, but Tammy, there's still murder. There's still the blight and the infrastructure problems. It didn't improve the plight of any of the African-American folks in the city. It was just a feel-good measure that amounted to absolutely nothing but taking down priceless historic monuments. And
yes.
It's just, typical of what you see from the left. Feel-good measures that really don't amount to anything to help the people that they're supposedly trying to help.
That's absolutely right. Wow, where did the time go? Hey, Jeff Cruere, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show. Everybody, you can find Jeff's show, Ringside Politics, from 7 to 11 a.m. Central Time on WGSO 990 AM. Jeff Cruere, don't be a stranger. I'll have you back.
Hey, I'd love to come back. And Tammy, I'd love people to check out my website, jeffcruere.com. That's C-R-O-U-E-R-E, and I'd love for folks to check out my book and maybe check out my new YouTube channel, which is my latest endeavor. So that would be awesome if they looked at it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll check it out as well. You take care, my friend.
Thank you, Tammy.
You're listening to The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with ex-cop novelist James Hartman. Now, The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by rentacomputer.com. Rentacomputer.com delivers the rental hardware your event needs to your office, trade show, booth, or event venue location anywhere in the United States or Canada. Their offerings include Apple iPads, iPhones, Microsoft Surface tablets, even copiers. So remember, Rent-A-Computer provides a superior turnkey event rental service with one point of contact for clients both large and small. That's rentacomputer.com, sponsor of The Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the talk alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
Be his first day back in a bed, not surrounded by hospital monitors. Be his first awkward dance at prom, his interview at his first real job.
When you join the Be the Match Merrill Registry, you unlock the power to save a life and all the living that comes with it.
Be his memory of warm summer nights surrounded by fireflies. Be his tent beneath the stars, his perfectly sharpened marshmallow stick, and his first burnt marshmallow.
Go to BeTheMatch.org to find more information on the power inside you and the life-threatening diseases that power can heal. With a simple swab from inside your cheek, you'll be a registered marrow donor.
Be his freedom on the open road. His first traffic ticket. His first, and if he can help it, his last, opera.
Thousands of patients, young and old, are searching for a match. Be the one to save a life. Take the first step at BeTheMatch.org.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech, and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
We are a bold and active voice for the unborn. We are Audio Girl Ministries, saving the lives of babies by helping moms in crisis pregnancies get past the crisis. How? Free ultrasound imaging so the woman can see the life she's carrying, and by supplying her with essential baby items, diapers, clothes, food, crib, car seat, all given with a loving and caring heart. Want to help? Log on to audiogirlministries.com. Make a tax-deductible donation. audiogirlministries.com. Thanks.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tammy Jackson. I'm a little over halfway through the show and now joined by my guest, James Hartman. James Hartman is a native of Washington, D.C. and a graduate of Tulane University. He's the founder of James Hartman and Associates, a political consulting and communications firm. He was has been a guest lecturer at William Carey University, at Tulane University, and before the Conservative and Reformist Caucus of European Parliament, and a featured speaker at numerous Republican Party events in Louisiana. So as I was telling him during the break, this seems to be the Louisiana or New Orleans special. James Hartman, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tammy, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to meet you or meet you on in the digital hemisphere, as it were.
Likewise.
In your bio, I know that you have a background that touched on law enforcement. Would you explain to everybody what you did, how you coordinated with law enforcement down there in Louisiana?
Sure. For 9 years, I was the public information officer at the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office, which is about 30 miles north of New Orleans. It's one of the richest and most populous parishes in the state and one of the fastest growing. And as public information officer, I didn't do hands-on law enforcement, but I responded to major crime scenes, and I worked with the deputies and detectives to control the flow of information and, in fact, help them bring in the information they needed to solve crimes.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of interesting because I like all those kind of crime shows and such, so I think, whoa.
Me too. Yeah, I heard you and Jeff talking about how much trash is on TV, and I thought, well, yeah, I like you. I like Blue Bloods a lot, and I'm a big fan of Law and Order, so I enjoy all the cops and robbers show.
Yeah, they're fun. I like the good guys getting the bad guys. Usually the good guys have guns to outdo the bad guys with the guns. You have a couple articles at a site called Hayride, thehayride.com that I'd like to talk about. And we're going to talk about a number of things, including the crime in New Orleans. And you might notice I pronounce things weirdly because I blame this on my friends. I went to Liberty University back before it was called Liberty University, and I had friends from Louisiana who instructed me that I had to pronounce it Louisiana, and they said New Orleans. And so here I am all these years later talking to people that lived there, and I'm saying it differently. So I doggone my friends in college.
But, you know, it depends on which part of Louisiana you're from, how you pronounce those things, and how much Cajun French heritage you have. Of course, me being from Washington, D.C., you know, I've adapted, but I've been down here almost 30 years now. So I speak a little bit of New Orleanian.
Well, I used to be fluent in French. I'm now very rusty, but it's interesting when I hear the French from that part of the country. It's very different. They have a very strong, what I would call a patois, and the origination of that, which is interesting, actually comes from the French Canadian area. And if you go to some areas up in north of Quebec, the accent is quite a bit the same. So
I know, it's a remarkable history. And I have friends who study linguistics who find it's something that anthropologists and linguists and sociolinguists continue to study because it's such a fascinating history and linguistic character.
Yes, I love languages. I always think it's fascinating. You wrote an article on May 22nd titled, "Thanks to Mitch Landrieu, I'm Done with New Orleans," and it begins like this. 2 years ago, a gunman, whose name is not worth mentioning, opened fire on worshipers in an African-American church in Charleston, South Carolina. A nation responded, and both Democrat President Barack Obama and Republican Governor Nikki Haley reacted, in my opinion, with stellar leadership. That same summer, New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu, who, full disclosure, everybody, he's the brother of the former and failed, I believe, Governor Mary Landrieu. He began his quest for the removal of the Confederate monuments in our state's most iconic city. Now, you know, he did it in such a strange way, and you talk about this in the article. Would you tell us what you believe Mayor Landrieu should have said and done and versus what actually happened?
Well, first of all, let me say it's interesting. I got a lot of heat from both the left and the right for that article. A lot of ultra-conservative Southerners were calling me a damn Yankee, among other things, and a liberal. And the liberals thought I was just very upset over the Confederate statues coming down. And of course, neither is the truth.
Right.
As you know, further in that article, I actually said, I don't care about the statues. I care about the process and how they came down. Because
right.
And the reason I say President Obama and Governor Haley responded with stellar leadership is because they used it as an opportunity to build unity. They led people to come together. Whereas and Governor Haley acted on a longstanding issue in South Carolina, which incidentally is where I went to high school, where my family still lives, and reacted about the Confederate flag, finally putting that issue to rest. Again, I'm not upset about the flag. It wasn't a champion for taking it down, but the way she handled it was wise, as was the way the president handled it. What Mayor Landrieu should have done is said, you know, my fellow New Orleanians, what just happened in Charleston has made me keenly aware that we might be sending a bad message here. And we need to all agree that New Orleans is a city for everybody, that we want equality of opportunity, and that we don't want symbols of oppression in our city. So let's talk about this. Let's have a dialogue. Let's figure out what we can do. And he didn't do that. He, in what I consider a dictatorial manner, said, we need to do what needs to be done to take these things down. And he set out to do it. And he strong-armed the city council into voting for it 6-1. He swore that it would cost the taxpayers less than $130,000. And we just found out recently, just last week, it cost $2.1 million to take down those statues.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, half of that supposedly was put up by private donors, but they won't tell us who those donors were. You know, they belong in a museum, but when our lieutenant governor, who was in charge of the state museum system, came to the mayor and said, give me the statues, the mayor said no. When the Confederate Museum in Mississippi came to New Orleans and said, we'll take the statues, the mayor said no. He said there would be a plan to take them down, put them in safe storage until there was a reasonable place. Now, let me, full disclosure, too. Three of those statues were to Confederate heroes. One of them was straight up a statue to white supremacy, a monument to white supremacy, and nobody objected to that one coming down. Nobody at all has ever objected to that one coming down. But the ones to the Civil War heroes, you know, it really rankled some people because they're so iconic. It also has created, you know, the phrase is overused, but a slippery slope. You know, I have Cherokee ancestry, and I've said hypothetically, are they going to take down the statue of Andrew Jackson in Jackson Square because he attempted genocide on the Cherokee Nation? Well, the mayor says no, because Andrew Jackson legitimately protected our city. Well, you know, lots of bad things can be done by good people and vice versa. And it's not necessary to go changing the names of all history. You know, we erase it, it becomes that much easier to repeat it. But more to the point, the mayor used that as a complete distraction from the issue that is destroying, absolutely destroying New Orleans, and that's crime. I mean, Tammy, you know, this is a city of like 500,000 people, less than 500,000 people in the actual city.
Right. Right.
Year to date, there have been about 340 people shot. 340 people shot. I mean, the gun violence is out of control. The crime is out of control. And the mayor goes and spends $1 million to take down statues that weren't bothering anybody until he told people that they needed to be bothered by them.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I've lived in and around New Orleans for almost 30. This August will be 29 years. So almost 30 years I've been here. Never once. And I have a very, very diverse social network in my
right.
profession, in my church, in my friends. Not once has anyone ever said to me, you know, that statue of Robert E. Lee really offends me. Never once has that been brought up. And if somebody had said it to me, I would have wanted to hear why. I would have wanted to listen to it. I would have wanted to say, okay, well, let's talk about what we can do here. Nobody was concerned about this until the mayor told them they ought to be.
Yes.
And again, then he rallied the political pressure to force the city council to vote with him, and then wasted a whole lot of time and money and further divided the people of New Orleans who really are better than that.
Well, it's not as though it was a a statue, most of them, of the KKK Grand Wizard or something like that. These were for the most part historical figures, and I cannot believe that he didn't give them to the people that asked for them. They're going to go into storage somewhere. What does that sound like? The Raiders of the Lost Ark or something? Like people putting right. stuff away in a big warehouse. We'll just put them away somewhere. You know, the left, I mean, the real left, not Blue Dog Dems or people like that, but the real left they're very short-sighted, I would say. I know in your article you mentioned the African American History of Museum in Washington, D.C., which I love that idea, although I have to tell you, I wasn't 100% pleased with it because I found out that they sterilized it of all but this monolithic black/African-American worldview such that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was not included at the last what I have heard anyway. And I met Justice Thomas. He's a wonderful man. He'd been cleared of all the accusations put against him years and years and years ago. But they wouldn't include him because he didn't fit, you know, whatever worldview they wanted in there. And I thought, ah, man, that drives me crazy because this stuff I think should be preserved. And like you, I believe that this should help us not repeat these errors that we've made in our past.
Right. I think some educational context could have been added. You know, put some historical placards around these statues saying, let's learn about this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm no Civil War historian. I'm not an historian at all. But, you know, I've been told that General Lee, you know, really spent his latter years advocating for civil rights and civil liberties for all
yes.
people.
Yes.
And you know, this is actually not new. About 20 years ago, maybe longer, there was a movement to rename all the public schools in New Orleans that are named after a man long dead named John McDonough. And there are many, many schools in New Orleans that are numbered, McDonough number 5 and McDonough 35. And about 20 years ago, somebody discovered that John McDonough had owned slaves and wanted all the McDonough schools renamed. And some other people did a little more research and came back and said, the reason all the schools are named for him is because when he died, he left $500,000, and we're talking like in 1870 dollars, $500,000, to the city for the establishment of free public education, and that his will specified that those schools be open to people of all races. So that's why the schools bear his name, but people wanted them taken away because he owned slaves. Look, I'm no defender of slavery. I'm not an apologist for the
right.
abuse or enslavement of other humans.
Right.
But we can't undo history by changing it. All of that to say, though, again, Tammy, the issue is not so much the statues, it's the absolute failure of leadership in this administration. It's truly been just astonishing to watch the misplaced priorities. You know, when he first took office, the mayor put a 2-year hiring freeze on the New Orleans Police Department. Well, you know how many officers you lose in 2 years? At an agency of 1,500,
wow,
a whole lot through attrition, retirement, death, termination, et cetera. So now the city is a full 350 officers short of where it needs to be. And no matter how many academies they run each year, they can't catch up. And then just this past year, the city hall got into a tiff with the district attorney, and the city controls the district attorney's budget. And so they cut his budget by $600,000. And he was actually told that he was, quote, prosecuting too many cases.
Oh, my word.
Well, that's his job.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So at a time when people are getting shot left and right, you know, many of them fatally, pardon me, and, you know, the city is cutting the prosecutor's budget, has effectively hamstrung the police department, and the poor police officers. You know, I was honored to carry a badge for 9 years, not in New Orleans, but it was still the same fraternity.
Yes.
They get blamed for everything.
They do.
They get blamed for the crime. They get blamed for the slow response times. They get blamed for the, you know, everything. And it's simply not their fault. And I have many, many friends from NOPD who have left in recent years to come to suburban agencies, some of them even taking pay cuts. Just to get out of an environment where they're never right and they never have the resources or backup they need.
Yeah, they're villainized all the time. One thing I do want to say, when you were talking about slavery, and of course, I think any right-thinking person, and I mean correct, would not believe that slavery is a good thing ever. And it's interesting how some of these people can change. Think about the name John Newton, everybody. The hymn Amazing Grace, the guy that wrote it, John Newton, used to carry slaves in ships until he was terribly convicted, repented, and wrote that hymn that people around the world love to this day. And so people can change. And so sometimes you have these things and you use them in a proper way, and you can touch people's hearts and minds and bring about some really good change. Talking about the crime in New Orleans, you had another article that I want people to look up. I have these articles linked on the show page so people can find them. If you're just joining the show, I'm talking to James Hartman. He's the founder of James Hartman and Associates, a political consulting and communications firm. He's a native of Washington, D.C., who's been living in New Orleans. This other article at thehayride.com is titled, Welcome to New Orleans, where you can play real life Jeopardy. And the article begins, Welcome to Jeopardy, the one which isn't a game. The category is crime in the Crescent City. Who put a 2-year hiring freeze on the police department, resulting in a severe shortage of law enforcement professionals? Answer, who was Landrieu? Who convinced the city council to approve a budget cutting $600,000 from the district attorney because he was prosecuting too many cases? Answer, who was Landrieu? And it goes on. You said, who shows up at major crime scenes and talks about a need for change in culture? Who is Landrieu? And then you also cite that the 300 people shot year to date in New Orleans, and 13 of them on Saturday, June 3 alone. These are amazing stats. And there are stats like that across the nation, James Hartman, in a lot of the big cities. So New Orleans seems to have just another failing mayor.
New Orleans is, we have the same per capita violence rate as Chicago.
We are essentially
tied for number one when you break it down per capita.
I do live
in the suburbs. I'm 35 miles north of New Orleans, but I maintain an apartment in downtown New Orleans, and I have for many years. I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep it because I'm tired of worrying about being shot.
Wow. And I understand that because I'm in the Portland metro area, but I'm really 17 miles south because I'm not a total idiot. And everybody listening, they give me a hard time about living in Portlandia. I was born in Salem, the capital. I was raised in Bend, Oregon, where there's a lot of good people who are more common sense and more conservative and not quite so nutty. Okay, as somebody that has a background that includes knowledge of law enforcement, what sort of things would you tell Mayor Landrieu or any big city mayor to do to reverse crime rates?
Well, at this point, there's no point in saying anything to Mayor Landrieu. He's got less than a year left in office, and there is much rejoicing. So there's not much point in saying that to him, anything to him at all that I haven't already said via the hayride. I think it comes down to a lot of things. It comes down to, funding, and as conservatives, Sammy, you and I both know that throwing money at problems is not the best way to solve them. But at the end of the day, you must have an active and well-functioning and well-equipped and well-trained police force. That's simply essential to public safety, and public safety is one of the primary duties of government. You're right.
Exactly.
Anybody can agree on that.
Yep.
So, don't waste money on silly things. Don't stop hiring police officers, but also don't stop vetting your applicants. Don't say, oh, we're short on cops, let's just hire anybody. It's so important that you have quality officers.
Yes.
Or deputies, depending on your structure. But it also comes down to leadership. And I think a lot of people don't understand the true application of that word. Leadership is not lip service. It's not speeches. It's not standing at a press conference on the day 13 people have been shot after you've been in office for 7 years and saying, we need to change our culture. That's not leadership. That's hot air. That's lip service. That's nothing. You know, a mayor stands on a crime scene and looks into a TV camera and says, "Damn it, people, enough is enough. You know, we need witnesses to come forward. We're going to fund the DA to keep you safe. We understand you are afraid, but without you, this will not change." We need a mayor who will go into crime-ridden communities and knock on people's doors all by himself, not accompanied with a bodyguard, and say, "Talk to me. Tell me what's happening in this community." We don't need a mayor who's going to grandstand over Confederate statues in an effort to secure himself a cabinet position in the Clinton administration, which, of course, didn't happen. You know, well, this is not leadership.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%, because a real leader listens to people and, you know, and says the right things. And they're not like some people like an Al Sharpton or people of that ilk, that when something happens, they use that for their advantage. And they run to the scene of the crimes to make people more riled up, as opposed to consoling and mourning with people and taking good steps to ensure that doesn't happen again. I have really appreciated the law enforcement people in a lot of communities that I'm hearing from that encourage things. For instance, I'm a concealed carry holder, and I was trained in NRA classes as well as by a former Navy SEAL who trains in tactical concealed carry. The sheriffs and a number of the policemen that I've talked to in Oregon, they love it when good, solid, law-abiding people are trained well and do carry. And because usually it's in all the gun-free zones that more and more things are happening. So I don't see a lot of these big city mayors having really good ideas. I think you need to be on a tour somewhere where you're talking to all prospective mayors, James Hartman.
I would be more than happy to, believe me. You know, one other thing that Mayor Landrieu did, and I don't want to make this about bashing him. I really don't, because at this point, like I said, it's moot.
It's too late.
This is about, yes, it's not too late for New Orleans. It's too late for him.
Right.
But we're stuck with him for another year. And I just hope and pray that we get a good mayor next year who can lead and do what needs to be done. But one of the biggest follies of his, which was another grandstanding maneuver, you know, earlier this year, he announced a $40 million public safety package, endorsed by our liberal Democrat governor, by the way, to redo Bourbon Street, repave it, put new planters up and down it, block off some more streets for pedestrian-only traffic, he brought in mobile barricades to prevent terrorist attacks like had happened in Nice. So that people couldn't drive through the French Quarter in large trucks and run over people. Now, what happened in Nice is no joke. But that's not solving New Orleans' crime problem.
No.
And then he had the amazing, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to the French Quarter, Tammy. You know, a lot of the bars down there stay open
24/7. Yeah, I haven't been there, but I've read all about it.
Yeah, well, 24/7, you know, I'm 47 years old. I don't do anything 24/7 anymore. I'm asleep at 10 o'clock.
You and me
but,
both.
You know, but I, you know, even my apartment in New Orleans is two blocks outside the French Quarter. I've gotten used to the noise, whatever. Y'all have fun. Because when I was 25 years old, I was probably out there at 3 o'clock in the morning having fun too. But the mayor's wackadoodle idea was, we're not going to make the bars close. We're going to make them close their doors at 3 a.m. Well, what good is that going to do? And I have friends down there who are bartenders who said that doesn't make us safer. That makes everybody in the bar a sitting duck.
Yes, yes. You know,
especially right now, we're looking at the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando.
Yes.
I mean, you talk about these bars on Bourbon Street that get packed to the gills sometimes, and then you're going to close the doors and lock people in. Mind you, this is after 2 years ago the city passed its smoking ban, so you can no longer smoke in the bars.
So you won't have lung cancer, but you could be in danger of other worse things.
It could be. No, you are.
You
it's
are.
Real life jeopardy, I'm telling you.
Holy cow. Holy cow. People need to read that article. Once again, Ed, both of his articles are linked at the show page. It's Welcome to New Orleans, where you can play Real Life Jeopardy. It's found at thehayride.com, but it's linked on the show page. Read it. It's great stuff. James Hartman, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show.
Thank you so much. And unfortunately, here in Central Time, it's now my bedtime, but it was a delight to stay up late and talk with you.
Oh, it was wonderful. And by the way, everybody, you can find him at jameshartman.net. And on Twitter, he is jameshartman3. So follow this guy. Look him up. He would be a great speaker. He does consulting, the whole thing. James, I'll have you back again sometime if you're willing.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Everybody, the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405 will be back next week with more great guests as usual. But until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up and not be silent. Let your voice be heard because we have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth. And I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preached what I should and I should not do. And the choir sang. Ooh. I tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence, you can't steal my voice, you can't keep me quiet, I will break the noise. Try to beat me down, tell me to shut my mouth, but there's a time to speak, and the time is now. Church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of
of light and truth, and I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. A good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore, and this world's gonna see.